Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My special guest tonight is Heidi Holliker. She's been an entertainment industry professional for over 30 years as an actor, a film producer, a writer, a marketing person, a visual and makeup effects person, and a producer. But of course, she's best known to the public as Stacy from the 80s classic film Valley Girl. Heidi, it is such a pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure to talk to you.
We have to mention the reason we're even talking is you called up when I was doing the Valley Girl special on Positive Noise. Yeah. You talked to Sheila, my wife. And the funny thing is you should have been on my end of things because Sheila's eyes were like the size of dinner plates. And
she was so cute. She was so adorable.
We had just watched the film again for the umpteenth billion time. And whenever she hung up and she said it was you, I thought she was joking.
I know.
But
well,
it
just came through my Facebook feed. It just like randomly said, oh, blah, 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 blah. Station is doing this live piece covering Valley Girl. And I thought, oh, you know, at home, working late, in my office, at home, thinking, I can find the number. I can find pretty much any number of any person anytime.
Now, you've had such a varied career, as I said in the introduction, but I have to ask you some questions about Valley Girl. But first, I want to say, you were born in Boston.
Yes, I was.
And you were on the Bozo Show?
I was. That was my TV debut. Bozo the Clown. Now, I don't know. It wasn't Larry Harmon, the original Bozo, but...
No, it was Frank Avruche, the Boston Bozo.
Oh, okay, cool. I didn't know that's good.
He was the guy who hosted like Million Dollar Movie, and he was very suave and sophisticated. And then you found out years later that he was in disguise Bozo.
Well, it was the story is my folks wrote a song called The Temper Tantrum, which was recorded by the Warlocks on Decca Records. You know, came out on a 45, which I have framed. My mom framed.
I have to get that. Okay.
I don't know if you can ever find it, but you know, I want to somehow put it out in as a song in one of my producers, so one of my projects, because it's so completely 60s. It is so perfectly, amazingly 60s, and we own the rights, of course, and so they had this song called The Temper Tantrum, which was based on my brother throwing temper tantrums, and it's just so clever and so wonderful, and for some reason, it debuted on Bozo the Clown, and so there's a dance, the Temper Tantrum dance.
Oh,
which
wow.
I really want to bring back, which is kind of imagine like doing the monkey with your arms up, and there's a line in it, hold your breath till your eyes bug out, everybody shout, and then you shout, like scream. And so we did the dance on Bozo the Clown at 3:03 and a half or so, and that was my television debut.
That story is worth the price of admission alone.
Thank
now, how old were you by the time you finally got to California?
I came here, I believe I was 5 and a half.
Now, did you have it in your mind that you wanted to be in the industry and film and stuff like that?
When I was 10, I wanted to be an actress, but I came out here because my mother got a job working on the Joey Bishop Show as the talent coordinator.
Wow.
So she moved us out here, and then we lived right off of Sunset Boulevard when it was called Sunset Strip. And so here this little Bostonian girl moves to Sunset Strip in the late 60s, and all I'm seeing is like paisley and pot, and it was just daunting. I hated it. I hated it at first. And then we moved to the Valley, and then I grew up in the Valley my entire life, and the only one in the film from the Valley. So that.
And you used your own clothes.
And use my own clothes, yeah.
So you really were a Valley Girl in Valley Girl.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, before we go on, did you get to meet Joey Bishop?
Yes, I did. And I remember being
you're just a wealth of stories.
I'm got to write it as a book. I've drafted it, but I have to, because it really is pretty amazing. I do have a pretty cool also.
Yeah, you do.
two of the Beatles. I met two of the Beatles, and I had an amazing, amazing experience with George Harrison.
Which okay, okay.
Was mind-blowing, and I'll tell you that in a moment if you'd like to hear it. And a Ringo, and I have a great Ringo story, which probably is the best story I have in my repertoire. But Joey Bishop, I was on set, and I remember sitting on Regis Philbin's lap and chatting with Joey. Not, it wasn't recorded. It was just hanging out. And I hung out and grew up on the Sonny and Cher. So sad because my mother worked as a secretary to the producers and the Andy. I didn't even give you any of this information in my little pre-bio, but the Andy Williams show, my mother worked for Andy.
Oh, my God.
And met Michael Jackson when Andy Williams would do the Jackson, introduce the Jackson 5 and the Osmond Brothers.
Oh, man.
And I remember being on the soundstage before the Jackson 5 was going to do some sort of a special related to Andy Williams. And it was just me and Michael Jackson, and he was 10, and he was so adorable. And he came up to me and I shook his hand. And I remember that moment because it was so special. I mean, there was something so, so beyond extraordinary about him. And
oh, wow.
Years later, when I worked for Rick Baker, Rick had did Thriller,
right.
Michael's makeup, of course, and Michael called the shop to talk to Rick about something, and it was just, you know, it's just been a very, I have a Warren Beatty story too, but it's been a very
It's not a typical Warren Beatty story, is it?
No, it's
okay, good.
You wanna hear it real quick?
Well, wait a minute, let's stay on the Valley Girl for a second, because you have so many stories, we could probably do another interview. Okay, how did you get the role in Valley Girl? I mean, how did you break into it? This is a major film that you were in. I mean, it's a classic.
Now it is.
Yeah, now it is.
But it wasn't. It was a SAG scale, low budget film cost between $275,000 and $350,000 total, with marketing and song music rights and all of that. So it was super, 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 super low budget. And I went to audition for the role. It was just another, you know, agent sent me on an audition for the role of Samantha. Samantha is the character who is in the club scene with Randy, Nick Cage, goes in the bathroom with him, his former girlfriend.
Right.
And I auditioned for that role, and I got that role, and I went in totally sexy, hair like, you know, crazy, teased out, tight jeans, black shirt. This could not be the opposite of Stacey. It's amazing that they actually saw through that. But I auditioned for that role. I got it. I was thrilled. It was going to be my second film, and like, yeah, I got this role. Cool. I mean, always amazing when you get cast. And then I got a call a couple of days later, maybe a day later, saying, "Listen, you know, you have that role, but we want you to come in and read for the lead, and we're going to send the script to your house tonight. You're coming in tomorrow morning." So I waited tables for 10 years, and I did split shifts, two different restaurants that particular day, got home maybe midnight or so. The whole script was at my door. I'm trying to remember. Anyway, I read it, studied it till 2 a.m., got in, I think it was a 10 a.m. interview, audition, went in, was really ready to read for Julie, completely had my Julie down. And they said, no, you're reading for Stacey. So I threw all my little actor prep out the window and just thought to myself, well, okay, I'll just be myself. That's what I got.
Okay, this is what I wanted to ask you. Point in time, was Stacey closer to the person who you were?
Yes, absolutely. Except I'm not mean, and Stacey definitely had a mean streak.
Yeah, but it was a cute mean streak.
Yeah, but there was always an agenda. Stacey
had. She definitely had an agenda.
She.
That's what made Stacey great.
Thank you. Her subtext was that she really had a thing for Tommy, and but
that's
yeah,
right.
You have to do what you're supposed to do, and you have to. I remember writing my backstory, you know, figuring it all out, doing my little, like I said, actor prep, and the girl who had the role of Stacey. Originally, it was cast. Her agent didn't close the deal because they didn't want to accept scale. So, thank you, thank you to that agent, you know, for it would have been a very different film. She's a lovely girl. She has, I'm blanking on her name right now, but she has a role in the film, in the beach scene. She's the actress with long straight hair in the beach scene with us. So they gave her something, but, you know, agents can either make or break you. You know, thank you to that other agent, whoever you are.
Now, you worked with the director, Martha Coolidge, who ends up being one of the great directors of 80s films. She directed another classic, Real Genius.
Real Genius, Rambling Rose.
I mean, she, her, this
we're very,
film.
We're very close. I love her. We talk often.
Well, you know, this film elevated itself out of the typical teen romp genre. And yeah, I remember I saw it in first run, and I thought it was a great film then. And and it was weird. Did you have any idea while you were in it that it was going to turn into this major classic?
No.
But did you have a feeling that it was not your normal, not your normal teenage romp film?
I knew it felt right. I knew it was not a satire on itself. The scenes were completely authentic, and we had such a small amount of film stock to use because Atlantic Releasing released the film, and they didn't want to put much money into this because they were probably looking at it as just another throwaway type teen film, and so we had very little film stock, and so we didn't do really second takes. Everything was pretty much first take.
Wow.
Martha would go in for a close-up shot, you know, or a long shot or whatever, and do a second shot, but we did one take on everything.
It was pretty unusual. That's very unusual.
You could feel the...
Was there a lot of pressure?
No, none. It was just, we just had a great time, and we all got along so well. And Nick is a method actor, and so Nick stayed in character through the whole film. It was only 4 weeks and 2 days of shooting, and he would, before the car scene, before we leave, when we're getting ready to leave the party and get into the car to go to Hollywood, he started kind of picking on me and being kind of sarcastic with me, and I didn't understand. I just thought, why is he being so mean to me? And he kept kind of saying whatever he was saying to me, and I said, Nick, what? Don't do that. You're being really mean. And he was just doing his thing to piss Stacy off, and obviously it worked. But he was great, just like you knew everyone else was just great. But it wasn't. You weren't outside of yourself. Looking in any way, you're just in the moment, and we were just doing another cool acting job. So no, none of us had any clue at all.
Now
Nick blew up immediately. It was like, wow, wow.
And you obviously went to the premiere.
Well, we didn't have a premiere. We had
no
premiere. I mean, in those days, it wasn't really like that, certainly for low budget films. We all went, well, some of us went to the opening night in Westwood, but there was no premiere. There was no premiere party. There was no wrap party. Ironically, we shot, three of us, myself, Deborah Foreman, Elizabeth Daly, E.G. Daly, shot cameos in the remake, which came out this past May, and that we had a pre-party. We didn't have a premiere party because it came out in May during COVID, but we had a wrap party. I mean, we had
all the things that you didn't have for the original film.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like going to your prom when you're 50.
It's okay. That's all right. I love going to my prom. It's cool. We had such a low budget that, yes, one of the wardrobe people is Sean Fries. Sean Fry. Sean is one of the boys in E.T., which I actually just watched again the other day. It was on television. What a brilliant film. Every shot of film is just...
Getting back to Valley Girl, it doesn't look cheap.
No, it doesn't. Fred Elms is a cinematographer. who is an extraordinarily established, very known, brilliant cinematographer. We had an amazing editor, Eva, maybe saying her last name wrong, Gatos.
Yeah.
And Martha, and then a man named Gordon Booz was our first AD. We had an amazingly professional, brilliant team, especially, like I said, Fred Elms, the cinematographer, because each scene, Martha played the blues and the pinks. So I remember when we were shooting the car scene with the convertible going to Hollywood, she would tell me, okay, when you see the light go off and it's pink, then you're in the valley. When you see it's blue, you're in Hollywood, and that's when you're going to respond that you hate this, that you turn the radio down, you hate this, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Now, you started off on a film career, and you were in a number of other movies, Rush Week, Joy of Sex, the remake. You have the cameo in this new 2020 remake of Valley Girl. Mm-hmm. But then you started doing some really wild stuff. And I got to ask you about this.
Tired of being an actress and didn't want to be frustrated and depressed all the time. And
is that what it was?
Film production? Yeah, that's what it was.
Well, you made some amazing choices. First of all, how did you hook up with the Firesign Theater?
Oh, that was so cool. That was, again, just an audition. And I'm still friends with Phil Proctor, who is one of the remaining...
One of the geniuses of the original Firesign Theater, yeah.
He's so lovely. We had dinner about a year ago. And that was an audition. And I tell you, I watched that back maybe 6 months ago. Firesign Theater, you can see it on YouTube. It's eat or be eaten. Eat or be eaten. And I play Betty Jo Fertilizer, a cheerleader, which was super exciting for me because in high school I wanted to be a cheerleader and I auditioned and I failed miserably, but my best friend Viv became the varsity cheerleader, so I became her campaign manager. And so I finally got the cheerleading outfit. I'm so excited that I go from being a virgin, innocent teenager growing up in Kudzu County, which is a typical Firesign Theater crazy, bizarre romp satire. And then
you're going to be sacrificed. You're the bride of the Kudzu.
I'm going to be sacrificed to a plant.
But it ends up you're not a virgin.
It ends up that the Phil Proctor's character and I were celebrating the, you know, sacrifice, which was going to happen the next day, which I literally was tied to a stake. And they took a dinner break and left me tied to the stake. And I was, guys, can you untie me? And it was.
Oh my God! But you did a bunch of. I mean, you did a number of other things. One of my favorite things that you were in. You appeared in a Twisted Sister video for their cover of "Leader of the Pack," which they did a sex role reversal of. And so you were Dee Snider's love interest, who supposedly died. And there was a little tribute to Jane Mansfield in that.
Oh, in the car?
When you go underneath the truck there, that's how Jane Mansfield died.
I didn't realize. I knew it was in a car, but I...
She was in a car. She hit the back of the truck, and she got decapitated. And so...
Oh, wow.
You go underneath the truck, but you survive, but then you go off a cliff.
I survive.
And then you still survive, but then the car explodes. And
I'm a tough cookie. I survive.
Now, how did you, I mean, was that a day shoot? Was that a week's shoot?
That was 4 days. That was 4 days of so much fun. And, you know, being the only girl on set with, you know, this iconic rock group, which they were even then. It was so exciting. We shot in Griffith Park. And then my favorite moment was definitely we were shooting on Halloween Santa Monica Boulevard. And that's when all of the Halloween parades, the gay parades in West Hollywood was really starting to get, this was in 85 or 86, starting to really become huge with thousands of people coming into Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood. And some of them were dressed similar to Dee Snider's get-up. So we're inside with Bobcat Goldthwait shooting the candy store scene, and Dee was just there on set, and Eddie Ojeda was there on set. We were just they were just there to be supportive. And I said to Dee, let's go watch the parade. And he's like, I'm kind of uncomfortable. I'm a little intimidated. I said, come on. Took his hand. We went out, stood outside on Santa Monica Boulevard and just watched, just experienced the parade. And that was a pretty phenomenal moment.
Yeah.
And I'm still really tight with Eddie Ojeda. In fact, I'm developing a television series for him right now.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My special guest tonight is Heidi Holliker. She's been in the entertainment industry as a professional for over 30 years as an actor, a film producer, writer, visual and makeup effects, a film producer. She's obviously best known to the wide public as Stacy from the 80s classic film Valley Girl, but you've done so much more. When did you start to switch into the more sort of technical and business end of film?
Yeah, that was right about 1991 or so. I was, as an actress, you're out there, didn't matter, I did Valley Girl or this film or 30 commercials and two soaps, and I was also in John Mellencamp's early video, which was so fun because I had such a crush on him. But and he's still my favorite, one of my absolute favorite singers. I love Mellencamp. And I was just not happy. I was still waiting tables. So for 10, 11 years through everything, Valley Girl, I took 4 weeks off from my waitress job. I dealt two waitress jobs at the time, two restaurants, same day and night, one a vegetarian restaurant, one a typical French restaurant on Melrose called Moustache Cafe. And I'd go day and night, and then I'd audition and go to acting classes. And after 10, 11 years, and having done a lot of cool work, I still wasn't making it, you know, so I still had to wait tables.
On a very serious note, yeah. Heidi, is a part of it is that you were typecast as this young, pretty thing?
No, not at all.
Not a good thing. I mean, Hollywood and cinema can be really tough on women, especially if you're not, 18. It is a tough.
No, I was still real young, so it wasn't that. It was just the reality of continuing. For me, I wasn't happy. Really the bottom line is I'd go in an audition, and again, I'd done a lot of work, and I had an expectation of what should happen. And so instead of being really in the moment, I was hoping and knowing what the end result could be, and it would be affecting my audition or my being able to just go in like I did with Valley Girl, or I did a teenage soap called Young Lives, and I'd go in and I'd just be completely myself and able to, you know, just pull out the joy and the whatever it needed to be.
Got it.
Super, so easy. And then it got to be where it wasn't, I was not happy. And I'd come home from an audition, I'd cry for 2 days. My folks who were in the industry said, you really need to make a change. This is not good. You need to get out of acting at least for a while.
So but you still wanted to be in the industry, right?
Well, there was no question. There's no other industry I've ever been in, so I know it so well. I've grown up in it. I certainly know it better now, 30 years later, than I did then. I know so many aspects of it. But I told myself, I'll take a year off. I'll go take a job. I took a job as a receptionist at a television commercial production company. And after a year, I moved up working for the producers, and then I thought, you know what, I'm not ready to go back. If there's a remake of Valley Girl, I'll do that. And that had been talked about for 20-some-odd years, different directors, different scripts. And, you know, I just kept going and worked in film production, worked at Daily Variety for the publisher, worked for Rick Baker.
Okay, well, this is where I want to stop. Hold on. So I want to talk about working with Rick Baker. Rick Baker is anybody who's done, who's watched any of his films that he's done the special effects for. He's one of the masters in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that? Seems like it would have been a big change up for you.
That was pretty amazing, and it's still amazing. And I'm close with Rick and his family, and all of the amazing, brilliant makeup artists.
And you worked on amazing films. You worked on The Ring.
20 features, The Ring.
Men in Black 2, Planet of the Apes.
Men in Black 1 and 2, yep, the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes.
The Devil's Advocate?
The Devil's Advocate, which is one of my absolute favorites. Not a huge effects film for us, but I love that movie. The Grinch, the Nutty Professor 1 and 2. So we were shooting Nutty Professor 2 simultaneously with How the Grinch Stole Christmas. So you had Eddie Murphy on the Universal set with his camp and Janet Jackson camp. Then you had Jim Carrey and his camp on the Universal set at Universal Studios. So we had stage 16 is one of the stages. The physical entire stage was dedicated just to How the Grinch Stole Christmas makeup effects and wardrobe and hair. Jeez. And that particular film, every single person on screen was a makeup effect, was an appliance makeup, which had not happened in film history until that point, I believe. I mean, The Wizard of Oz had a lot, but this was just an extraordinary experience. So you had Rick was in the little Jeep that you drive around. You'd go to one set, then the next set. So it was a really spectacular time. And working for Rick, I knew, having been in the industry and different aspects of it, I knew what an amazing, special moment this was and how I appreciated it, where a lot of the staff, they'd work in our shop, but different shops, and they'd do an amazing job. But I knew, because working for Rick Baker with his brilliance and reputation and resume, that we were treated so well by the studios. And I knew that was not the norm.
Did you also learn a lot about how the industry worked on that side of it, and that really benefited you later in your career?
Absolutely, because I was the liaison between us and the studios and the studio heads and the producers and the stars, the talent, the directors, because I was Rick's right hand person. I don't do makeup. I've never done makeup except, you know, on my own face. But I was myself and another person, Bill Sturgeon, co-ran the studio. So my job was to do everything that Rick needed.
Wow.
Coordinate for Rick, co-run the studio, do payroll, do HR, do liaison to everyone, and then Bill Sturgeon would handle everything, everything being made and on set. So it was extraordinary.
Heidi, did you at this point now feel happy about your career? Because you're talking about your acting career was like obviously tearing you apart. But this point, this felt good?
I'm sorry.
This felt good?
Yeah. It felt great because I was using all of my other abilities that I didn't even realize I had. It was all a tremendous learning experience, and there's always a learning curve anytime you go into a new field, and I knew nothing about makeup effects or mechanical effects or any of that. So you literally jump in. I answered an ad, a tiny little ad in the Hollywood Reporter when I was looking for a new job that said, assistant wanted FX Glendale.
That's
and
all?
I knew who Rick Baker was, but I wasn't a fan.
Yeah,
you know, I wasn't, one of my best friends was an effects guy who loved everything about it, you know, a boy who grew up, you know, making things and making little 8mm movies. And I mean, I knew Rick, but I could work so well with him because I wasn't coming from that place of, oh my God, I can't believe you did that movie. Oh my God, you're that person. If I had been that way, which justifiably, most people would be. I wouldn't have been able to do the job at any level. So I was able to work beautifully with him, understand the way he would work and his process, and be able to liaison with the staff of anywhere from 30 to 120 people, depending on the film.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My special guest tonight is Heidi Holliker. She's been in the entertainment industry for over 30 years as an actor, a film producer, a writer, a marketing person, a visual and makeups effect, a producer. And you sort of found yourself, and now in the last 7 years, you've been doing a producing. And through that, you've worked with an amazing roster of people: Ron Howard, Tim Burton, Richard Zanuck.
That was with Rick. Working with them was all via the films with Rick. As a producer, I've worked with Don Hahn, who is the producer for The Lion King, Beauty and the Beast,
wow,
Maleficent, Frankenweenie, and I was able to produce a project for him. And I've been developing original material that either I've created or written, or
I noticed that you've started to write your own material.
I did. I came up with I've come up with two projects that are my own, which I'm shopping, and which means, you know, pitching, getting it out in the marketplace. And then I work with various writers and writing teams, and I have two projects right now that I'm so excited about that are
can you talk about?
I can't actually go into any details, but
okay.
There's one is working with a writer and developing his life story based on a play called 57 Chevy, which is a fabulous story. And so we are almost done completing. We are almost done with our limited series, 8 episodes to present. And the other is that I'm really excited about are two writers that approached me, and I asked if I would read their material, and I love their script, and I work with the writers, meaning we go back and forth. I read it. I give them notes. They incorporate the notes. They come back to me. We then tweak it. We make it work. We make it better and better and better. And now that is actually going out to a major studio this month. So it's exciting, and I really love it. And I'm able to just be in my element. So all of the experience I've had working, I work for Magnolia Pictures, home entertainment and distribution. So that's my full-time day job, and that's amazing. And I've learned so much about film distribution in that position.
Yeah,
I learned
I totally get it.
3 years at Disney in marketing. Obviously, the 9 years with Rick, and working again early on in commercials. It's just been print advertising. It's been such an education, and when you change jobs, you know, you're anxious and nervous,
yep,
and but I just dove in, and for some reason, my capacity to learn just keeps improving. So,
do you think you could ever be seduced back into acting?
Sure. Absolutely.
Never close that.
Anyone out there?
If the role is right and the script is good, she's there.
Throw it to me. I'll be right there. Absolutely. It's so fun. Acting is so fun. Being on set for the Valley Girl remake, which we did 2 years ago and came out this May, I did a cameo in it. That day was surreal. It was one day. It was one maybe 14-hour day. And I was having so much fun with the extras hanging out, because they're there. They were there to get a gig, and
they
also really loved the original. So when I was sitting around and they realized that,
it's her,
Stacy.
It's Stacy.
And that was, you know, it was just a really fun day. And then when finally, maybe at 11 p.m., when I went to shoot my scene, and the camera, hundreds of people, because it was an auditorium scene, and the director, Rachel Goldenberg, and the producers, Matt Smith and Stephen J. Wolf, really, really lovely human beings. And the camera, this huge camera, then turns around, you know, for your scene. I realized, oh, my God, do I know how to do this? It's been so long. So I sort of literally floated out of my body, way up and up to the ceiling, looked down. This has never happened to me. And looked and thought, oh, you better just don't let them know you don't know what you're doing and just start to play. And it was great. And I, of course I'd do it again, no question. But as far as my passion is absolutely producing.
Okay. I'm going to let you go. After, I want to hear your Beatles anecdote, and then I want to hear the Warren Beatty anecdote.
Oh, yeah, that's so good. Okay, make it quick. All right.
No, take your time. Take your time. I love hearing you talk.
Ringo Starr, which one do you want first?
Your choice.
Okay, well, I'll start with George. I was waiting tables at a restaurant in Sherman Oaks, and it was when George Harrison was with Jeff Lynne, and they were doing the album Cloud Nine.
Yeah.
And they were, Record One or some recording studio in Sherman Oaks. And it was a Monday night, which was traditionally at the time in the late 80s, Monday night football. So the restaurant was pretty much empty. And no one really wanted that shift because you wouldn't make any money. But, you know, that was my shift. And there were maybe three tables in the restaurant. And then these musician types came in, as my manager at the time, a guy named Dale, knew that I was good with musicians and rockers, and so he seated them in my empty station, really cool nice. Little cafe, and I looked at the customers, and it was George Harrison and Jeff Lynne, and one other person I'm completely forgetting who it was, and I'm sure one day I'll remember, and George, I was completely cool. Again, same with Rick Baker. I wasn't a Beatles fan, meaning I wasn't fanatical about being near a celebrity or and was able to be completely calm and professional. And I took their order, and then I remember, and looking at George's face when he ordered, he made such pure eye contact.
So he made eye contact with you, which so and you George didn't. Harrison. Did you know he was George?
Oh, I knew, of course, absolutely, no okay. question. But again, I was calm because I was. I was just totally calm about it. With Mellencamp, I saw him at a restaurant and went up to talk to him, and I was kind of shaking in my boots. And when he was sitting with Sean Penn, and they completely dismissed me at the moment, but with George Harrison, no biggie. I was calm, and he you know, in Men in Black, there's this fear when you're looking at one of the movies, it sort of you see the Earth, and then you see it sort of get bigger and explode, and that sort of mystical thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That was exactly what it was like looking at George Harrison. It was as if the rest of the world melted away and your eyes met, and I could feel his intense, pure, spiritual wow. energy. I've never experienced it with another person. It was magical. I wasn't expecting it. I was calm. It maybe, you know, lasted however many seconds I was looking at him, but I realized at that moment, as I was having this reaction to this person, that this person has seen more in life with the other three gentlemen in his band than any human beings have ever seen or experienced in various ways. And it just, but you could feel he was known, of course, as, you know, the spiritual beetle and the yeah. one who just karma and everything, and it was so real, it was so pure, it was unbelievable. And
wow.
And then Jeff Lynne spilled his beer and it went under George's feet, and then I went to clean, and then he had George help me. He said, I'm so sorry. And we were cleaning the beer up together. And then when the other guys left, and he turned around at this glass door exiting the restaurant, and he said, good night, thanks a lot. And it was so, I just said, good night. And it was just this moment, literally, where just everything melts away. It was just the most,
wow.
It was completely pure and extraordinary. On to my Ringo story, very different experience, but possibly my favorite story I have. I was at a typical Hollywood party with my folks. It was a music producer's house in Hollywood Hills. Extraordinary house, amazing backyard, that you would go up all of these stairwells to get into the house. And it was just, imagine an incredible Hollywood party with everybody there. And I was actually having a little chit-chat with Timothy Leary about nonsense. I have no idea what. Of course, I'm not
wow.
know what they discussed with Timothy Leary at any point, but I knew who he was, and I was just being myself, and he was quite lovely. We may have been talking about the appetizers. I don't know, but it wasn't deep, but it was very entertaining. And my dad and I decided, my mom was sitting down, we were going to get some food to bring back to her, and we went in one of those outdoor to indoor stairwells, and we went up the stairs, and there was a landing with a very large throne-like chair. In that chair was Ringo Starr with Barbara Bach next to him, and then maybe five friends, you know.
Yeah.
Associates.
And he was with Barbara Bach at that point.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. It was probably around, I'm thinking around 89 or so.
Okay.
And somewhere around there. Maybe 90. Yeah, somewhere around there. And my dad is an agent. He introduced himself. The agency he was with represented Ringo Starr and the All-Star Band. And whenever he was doing that, so whether it was late 80s or early 90s, I'm not sure. And I was chit-chatting with him, and he was being, you know, very cordial, respectful, not overly interested. And then then he looked at, and then my dad introduced, this is my daughter. And Ringo said, and what do you do? And I said, well, I'm an actress, and I'm an artist. I'm a painter. I also paint and do various art, and still do. But that's a whole nother, like, yeah.
We'll do another show on that.
We'll do another show on that. Anyway, I was telling my, I happened to be in a two-person show in Beverly Hills at a gallery those few days. And I told him I have a two-person show in Beverly Hills, and that's what I do. And then I said, and you? And the silence of that moment it was maybe 1, 2, 3 seconds, and then he broke up in laughter, because obviously I was being sarcastic. But
okay, I wasn't sure for a minute there where you were.
No, of course I knew. And no one on the earth has ever said to Ringo Starr, and you?
And you, what do you do?
What do you do? It was really amazing. And the laughter of all of them.
That's a great...
extraordinary.
Heidi, yeah. We're going to have to stop there. We're going to have you back.
Okay.
Would that be okay? You know what? We'll talk about this off mic, but I've got to wind this up because people are waiting to use the studio. That story again was worth it. My special guest tonight is Heidi Hollacker, who's been in the entertainment industry as a professional for over 30 years as an actor, as a production person, as a writer, a marketer, a visual and makeups person, a producer, and of course, she is best known to the wider public as Stacy from the 80s classic Valley Girl, or from the Dee Snider remake of Leader of the Pack. I think that was a great role, too. Heidi, it's been such a real pleasure to talk to you.
It has. It's been really a joy for me. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time, and I mean it about having you back.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, this has been Mark Lynch. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. Good night.